welcome to episode 3 of Been There, Done That, a podcast series for independent coffee shop owners brought to you by iZettle. I'm your host, Nassos Papadopoulos, and on the show with me today is Jeffrey Young, the Managing Director of Allegra Strategies and the founder of the London Coffee Festival. Understanding the major macro trends driving change in the coffee industry is really important, because these trends affect what consumers expect and how they spend their money. Whether it's the rise of premiumization or the growth of the experience economy, you need to stay on top of what's going on in the market or risk getting left behind. Fortunately, Jeff has spent the last 20 years monitoring trends in the coffee industry, so there's no one better to help you get ahead of the curve. More on that in a minute. But first, remember you can access today's special bonus content by going to the podcast section of the iZettle blog at iZettle.com or direct from the link bit.ly/iZettlePodcast. That's bit.ly/iZettlePodcast. Just choose this episode, episode 3 on the list, go to the page and sign up on the form to access your bonus content. For this episode, the bonus is a cheat sheet helping you prepare for the major macro trends in the industry, including the fifth wave of coffee, a term coined by Jeff himself, as well as a copy of the episode transcript so you can get hold of the conversation in written form and review it whenever you want. Now, back to business. Jeff founded Allegra Strategies 2 decades ago, in 1999, and has since turned the business into one of the leading strategic research consultancies, focusing on retail, hospitality, health, and wellness. Allegra's annual Project Cafe reports have become the gold standard for many of the best businesses in the industry because of the unique insights they offer into the market and consumer trends. Jeff also founded the London Coffee Festival back in 2008, which has become an unmissable event for coffee aficionados and industry professionals, and its success led him to create coffee festivals all over the world, from New York to LA and Milan to Amsterdam. And if all that wasn't enough, Jeff is also the co-author of the London and New York Coffee Guides and the founder of Charitable UK Coffee Week, which brings clean water to coffee-growing communities around the world. In this episode, we discuss a whole range of topics, including the fifth wave of coffee and how it's influencing the industry, the impact of premiumization and how to avoid getting stuck in the middle, and how to balance staying on top of retail change, technological development, and changing consumer habits, and still run your store effectively on a day-to-day basis. This episode was a fascinating one, with plenty of great insights from someone who's been monitoring the coffee industry for decades, someone with real hard data to back up their views on top of a wealth of experience in the field. So, without further ado, please enjoy this conversation with Jeffrey Young. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I'm really glad to be here.
It is fantastic to have you here. I'm looking forward to diving into a bunch of topics today, everything from the big macro trends shaping the world of coffee to premiumization to digital technologies and their impact on the industry. But before we get into all of that good stuff, tell me a little bit about how you got into the coffee industry.
Well, it's a really long story, but let me cut to the chase. I was in management consultancy. I saw the sort of consumer interest in coffee, but actually it was a mate who was launching a chain of coffee shops from Australia, who took me around and showed me what he was doing, in shopping malls in the UK, and I thought, wow, this guy is onto something. I'd lived in the States and seen the rise of Starbucks, the share listing of Starbucks, and a former finance student, and I was tracking the trends of shares in the States, and I thought something's going on here. But then, as a management consultant, I could see that our fellow management consultants were nimping out in the middle of the day to go and get a Cafe Nero, to get a Costa or a Starbucks, and something was going on. And I just wrote this report about the growth of coffee shops 20 years ago now, predicting a boom. I never could have foreseen this, the scale of boom that we did see. I think I was a voice that the industry needed. And it was lucky for us because we were saying this market will grow. There were a lot of naysayers, a lot of people saying, the market's already peaked. The branded coffee shop at the time in the UK only had about 700 outlets. It's now 8,000 or something beyond that, and it's still growing. Yeah, right time, right place, but it was picking a phenomenon around sort of coffee and its role that it was going to play in this new society that's, we've seen emerge over the last 2 decades.
Other than the things that you were seeing happening over in the States, were there any nascent signs of things starting to bubble up over here in the UK as well?
Well, it was really the development of brands, you know, and these were very small businesses at the time. That was Cafe Nero, it was Costa Coffee, Pret a Manger was a tiny business. These businesses were the new era of businesses where British consumers were starting to say, hey, I want to consume more of my, you know, my food service spend out of the home. And it was, you know, the idea of having in the days a branded cup with a logo on it that sort of felt better than your polystyrene experience and your, you know, your instant coffee that you get at home. This was a little treat and something that was special, and it became a moment, you know, of specialness. Of course, we were in the dot-com era, and it was sort of really early beginnings of a new era of technology, of informal sort of way of working, and coffee shops also were playing into that role where people were starting to have meetings in coffee shops, and it was the beginnings of something, you know, where the coffee shop was becoming the new living room. Of course, it was really Starbucks on a global level that created that buzz. And in 1998, the year before, you know, I took the leap to create Allegra. You know, Starbucks had made an acquisition of Seattle Coffee Company and acquired a business, you know, for $56 million for 52 stores, and that was big news, you know, in the food service industry in the UK. Not only was this giant behemoth coming to England to create, you know, this new lifestyle experience, but what it did seem there was valuations, and there was going to be a lot of acquisitions, and actually, you know, I was working in a consultancy that was actually focusing on acquisitions. And for whatever crazy reason, I left my job to write this report, expecting there to be acquisitions in this industry. Those acquisitions have come fast and thick over the last couple of years, but really it was very early days. You know, that Starbucks acquisition of Seattle Coffee Company was one of the few at the time, but it was an indicator that there was money to be made, and it was indicated that the big guys were sort of moving into this market, into the UK, and luckily, over time, it has grown exponentially.
So you've just very eloquently described the transition from first to second wave, and obviously bits of the second to third wave, where we went from instant coffee in the home and polystyrene cups to branded coffee shops, as you're saying, the growth of the early sort of big boys who are now dominating the industry in the UK, and then second to third, the transition to sort of more artisan coffee. Something you've been speaking a lot about recently is the fourth and the fifth wave of coffee. So just tell me a little bit in sort of broad brushstrokes about the trends that characterize that fifth wave and what that means for the industry as a whole.
Yeah, it's worth reflecting a little bit back on, you know, the importance of the third wave and what that meant. And the third wave was really a rejection of the cookie cutter, the sort of overly commercial world where, you know, we just roll out another store and they're all the same. Whereas the second wave was super cool. The first stores, the first Nero stores, the first Starbucks stores, they were as on trend as you could get, you know, 20 years ago. It got too stale, and the third wave created this sort of anti-corporate culture, and it was about the wave of craft of coffee. And so really that was the fundamental shift. But beyond that, as the third wave evolved, they too became very samey. You know, you could just buy a cool coffee machine, get some exposed brick walls, throw down some chairs, and you're apparently instantly awesome. The geeks and the people who are a little bit more cerebral would start to go, okay, science of coffee, this, let's look at our coffee and work out what makes a good coffee. How do we perfect it? You know, on one side, the chains did a good job at getting consistency, but they got consistency at a sort of a medium to mediocre level, whereas the fourth waivers, the sort of what we call the geeks of coffee, wanted to work out how do you get that consistency of a chain at a higher level, and they set it out. But that wasn't enough, because, you know, just having great consistent coffee is nowhere near enough to have a viable, stable, you know, business that's actually going to be financially valuable. So the fifth wave, in a sense, is kind of second wave completely reinvented with all the benefits of the fourth and the third embedded into it. This is about a new era of professionals where these young entrepreneurs that are setting up these businesses are starting with all the knowledge, you know, all the cumulative knowledge of the past, but also unashamedly business focused. This is a new era for chains, and this is a new era for businesses that are targeting the millennials. 2 decades later, we have a totally different set of consumers. We have a totally different technological landscape. We have a completely different societal structure now than we had 20 years ago. This has been a period of unprecedented change. And the fifth wave businesses are those that are scaling up the concept of boutique without becoming template. And that's very hard to do. It's almost impossible to do. It's a holy grail to some extent, the fifth wave. You may never ever get there, because with every store that you add, you're trying to add more consistency, you're trying to add more processes. But how do you add those processes without becoming ubiquitous, ordinary? And even as your brand gets more exposed, even if you are awesome on a level of 50 different stores and they're performing incredibly well, yesterday's great is tomorrow's ordinary. The businesses of today, the very sharp shooters that are running this new era of businesses targeting millennials and have the capabilities of raising the funds so that they can actually do things properly, these are the ones that are succeeding in today's world.
You touched on the huge developments in technology and how that's impacting the industry. Can you just talk a little bit about how you see tech influencing the day-to-day of coffee shop owners in terms of whatever it might be, point of sale systems, the way they interact with their customers? What are things that they should be paying attention to and acting on?
Yeah, tech is, first and foremost, it's got to be absolutely seamless to the customer. Tech is just a way of enabling you to deliver those services to your customers each and every day consistently, to manage your business as well. So things like payment systems, you know, today we're heading in a world where, you know, I think we're only 2 or 3 years away from completely cashless environments. So the systems that allow you to make it easier for your customers to pay, but then behind the scenes, the management systems that you have, the ordering systems, all the systems that enable you to schedule your staff to run your business, you know, efficiently. But also, Allegra's latest research is showing that loyalty apps are a really main driver of consumer loyalty. You know, we're asking consumers, you know, why do you visit this coffee shop? You know, we interview over 50,000 consumers in the UK every year. And first and foremost, location. Second, quality of coffee. And third now is the sort of loyalty and loyalty app. Cafe Nero has been incredibly successful with their sort of stamp system. And even they've moved away from that now. The old ways of doing things, the paper base, you know, absolutely fantastic. They've got that sort of authenticity about them. But, you know, the world moves on. And, you know, so without some kind of a loyalty app, really it's going to get, you know, harder and harder. And I think small businesses, you know, one-off businesses that can't spread it across multiple locations, they're going to miss out as well.
Just picking up on the thread there where you were discussing about all of the different things that the customer now expects from their experience and how, obviously, in order for that to be cost-effective, you really do need to be scaling it across multiple stores. Now, as you touched on, any business is hard to run, and there may be some people who just are happy with one coffee shop and they just want to have that as their livelihood and enjoy that business for what it is. There will obviously be ambitious coffee professionals who are listening to this podcast who do have ambitions of scaling. Do you think, given the demands of consumers now, it's becoming more and more important for people to really sort of solidify and concretize their concept and then go and seek outside investment, or indeed get investment or put in money into the business themselves so that they can scale and that they can provide all of those very important pieces of the puzzle for the consumer experience?
I think today's coffee shop operator is really got to understand, you know, what he or she wants to be. Are we an independent and a one-off, maybe a second store, or are we going to scale? And I think you've got to solidify your concept before you can scale up anything. I mean, and it's actually getting the absolute fundamentals right on one store first. The moment you want to kind of go for that second location, that's when things start getting difficult. And from our experience, we probably think what we see is it's really the third location. A bit like in music, where the third album is really the test. This is the test of whether this band has longevity. But so once you're at three, you have to really sort of ask yourself, how do we scale? And I think this is the moment that businesses need to look back at their processes, look back at what really works. The biggest piece of advice I would give any operator that wants to scale their business beyond 2 or 3 outlets is work incredibly hard on identifying, training, developing, and retaining the manager. And I think too many small business owners like to think they can do everything best themselves, and they spread themselves thin. The biggest failing we see, and the biggest success that we see of businesses that can scale up, is identifying on a site-by-site basis that manager that is going to take almost like an ownership view of that business. We see the same thing with chains, you know, the whether you're talking to a Costa or a Nero, the big chains with now hundreds and hundreds of stores. All their stores, the results of each of and every one of those stores is so strongly correlated to the strength of that manager. And I think too many small businesses really begin with the idea of, you know, I'm just going to put someone in, you know, cheap and junior, and I'm going to let them get on with it, and I'm going to tell them exactly what to do, and you know, I'm going to be very prescriptive. And actually, you know, reality is you'll get a lot of churn, and you know, your staff motivation won't be ideal, and then you've just got a very ordinary store. So the only way to really achieve a sort of a fifth wave philosophy throughout multiple venues is to work on the leader within each of those stores, and then you can apply all the tech, and then you can apply all the beautiful design and everything that you know, which is, you know, almost like the givens.
One of the things you talk about a lot at Allegra is this idea of premiumization. Now, obviously, in a lot of the major markets, whether it's the US or the UK, the big boys are still dominating the industry to a large extent, but you do have the Bluestones of the world coming in and taking market share. To what extent do you think people starting coffee businesses now, people maybe with a shop or two, people who think of expanding, to what extent do you think they need to really focus on that premium upmarket customer to avoid getting stuck in the middle and being completely left high and dry in this very competitive marketplace?
Yeah, getting stuck in the middle is a very, very dangerous position. Small businesses, I mean, they have to make a choice. If I was to advise anyone setting up a coffee shop and decide, trying to work out how to position themselves, really the premium end of the market is the only viable space for an independent business today. I mean, it's things, doing things well, charging sufficiently so that you can cover your costs, really delivering that value so that, you know, you get a good return. The only other way is to be right down at the value end of the market and being there in massive volume. But how does an independent these days get access to high volume, high footfall sites? They are going to the large chains, and you know, even, you know, one brand that's really growing quite rapidly, you know, is Greggs, for example, that's taking the very value end of the market. So how do you then start to compete with not only with those businesses in terms of buying, not only in, you know, in terms of getting access to the high footfall space to give you the sort of volume? It's just almost unfeasible. So, you know, middle ground's just not an option because you're neither here nor there. You're pressured. Your customers are always going to look one way or the other. Okay, I'm going to get better value down there, or actually I'm more aspirational, I want that. So, yeah, maintaining that high standard really feels like it's the only way to go.
When it comes to the quality of the product itself, that's obviously something that any coffee shop owner needs to think about, but they've also got to think about how the type of coffee they're serving matches the customer base that they're trying to target. How would you encourage them to think about that? What kinds of things do they need to be paying attention to?
Yeah, I mean, the types of things that small operators need to be paying attention to these days is, of course, you know, a good roaster, great machine. I mean, I think there's a myriad of things you have to do to keep your coffee absolutely at the top notch that it needs to be for today's millennial consumers. And that means your staff need to have regular training. I mean, it's, you just can't throw someone onto a coffee machine and say, hey, go and make it in a couple of hours. Because even the chains, you know, take their staff through days of training before they put them on a coffee machine. So why would an independent be able to do it any easier, any better? And you know, the consistency you get from having a well-trained barista, because we see it and we see customers telling us, oh, I usually like that coffee shop when this guy's working, or but when that one's working, I avoid it. So customers are not stupid. And so the training of staff is really the starting gun to getting the quality. A lot of small businesses take shortcuts when it comes to training because they're going, well, what if I train them and then they leave? And then the old adage that, you know, I think was quite funny and quite humorous is, what if you don't train them and they stay? You know, well, that's really going to mess up your business.
Yeah, for sure.
So there's an imperative to obviously buy good equipment, get a good coffee, and then train that staff. Next, things like latte art skills. So be able to foam the milk, you know, microfoam the milk and develop that velvety feel, especially in Britain here. It's quite a milk-based coffee culture, so texturing, milk texturing skills. And moving on from milk, there's a huge, huge trend towards non-dairy, you know, and so then you've got to get your staff trained up, not only for texturing milk, but also texturing non-dairy. Innovation in coffees as well, things like cold brew. Again, these trends have come from the States. Will we ever see the cold brew market in the UK as big as in the States? Probably not. But it's becoming a staple, and it will become a staple. And as long as you've got mainstream brands like Costa Coffee making cold brew in store, in each and every store, they're actually making it themselves. Well, there's no excuse if you as an independent wouldn't actually be serving cold brew to your customers. And it sets a sort of a benchmark of like where we're actually innovating. And so trying to get their staff as well trained to talk about coffee and to be confident, giving them time to explore and taste, and again back to trainings and education, so that they can have that conversation about why this coffee is better than another coffee, and just to get customers excited about coffee. And beyond coffee, it's the other beverages, whether it's chocolates, whether it's teas, whether it's products like kombuchas and, you know, okay, matchas and all the other things that are becoming really part of the whole wellness world that customers are embracing. You know, that needs to be on the menu, and it needs to be sort of done well rather than just an afterthought. And then moving on to food. Food is a really important part of not only increasing the average spend, you know, so taking your average ticket price from £3 for a cup of coffee now for many places to £11, you know, with something kind of substantial, or are we £7 or £8 with a very high quality pastry or something accompanying the coffee? So food really is a major distinguisher, and freshly made food on site, original food made with authenticity. But you've got to be able to do it with flair, and you've got to be able to get your staff to do it each and every day the same way, and just an imperative in today's world if you want to stand out from the crowd.
One of the things you talk about with this wellness trend, as you touched on earlier, is the mindful attitude towards life, living well. And I think an extension of that, as we see in a lot of consumers now, is ethical consumerism, care for the environment, sustainability. How do independent coffee shop owners need to be thinking about these trends? How important is it? What steps can they be taking to make their shops as sustainable as possible so that they do continue to appeal to this hugely growing category of consumer who is mindful and aware of the types of businesses that they want to give their business to?
Yeah, here's an area where the independent can really excel. It's very hard for a chain to get all its products recycled. It's very hard to get cups not thrown onto the streets with logos and, you know, single-use plastics and other with lids. So an independent has a really huge opportunity to position itself as an ethical business. I'm not saying it's easy, but just by taking a few simple steps, you can fill many of those check boxes, which really kind of excite and engage and really you know, create closer connectivity with sort of a new era of consumers. Things like, you know, buying coffee from a single farmer. So this is a single origin coffee. I know where that coffee comes from. So that transparency, if we haven't just bought that coffee from off the back of a lorry or whatever, this has been hand-picked. So telling the story of the coffee, getting your staff to understand that you're paying a little bit more for that coffee so that it is high quality, and the people who have made the coffee, have actually picked and grown the coffee, have been well looked after as well. So that's something that tick. Things like recycling, encouraging your customers to bring their own cups so you can create that sense of community where you find time to make a dialogue with your regulars and getting them to understand, and then actually formally taking steps to properly recycle all your work, and then just telling your customers that what you're doing, you know, just subtly. Charitable objectives as well, taking part in things that make a meaningful difference, whether it's a local charity or whether it's something like Project Waterfall, where you're giving clean water to human beings in coffee-grown communities, taking part in Coffee Week, developing connectivity into the community in each of the locations where your coffee shop might operate from, if you're more than one, or if you're just a single one-off coffee shop owner. Yeah, really, really engaging, but not taking it for granted. So one of the challenges I had with the third wave is there were a lot of coffee shops that were kind of pointing fingers back at the second wave as going, we're not like them. We're awesome because we're not like them. And there's no accreditation there. There's no authenticity, and there's no really substance to being, I'm good because I'm not like them. What you need to be is just genuinely good. There's so many ways that an independent can just shine and stand out. But they shouldn't be sort of pointing fingers about, we're better. But if you just accentuate the quality and the craft and care that you put into what you do, that goes a long way with today's consumers. Because a lot of consumers absolutely do want to support local businesses. But when local businesses are not good enough, they're not good enough.
We've touched on so many important topics today, whether it's premiumization or quality of coffee or sustainability, health and wellness. Just to finish up, let's do a couple of very quick questions.
Okay.
So to start off with, what are your daily coffee habits? How many do you have? Where do you go? What's your coffee?
We've got some great coffee in our office, so we get a lot of different roasters. We've got our convenient super automatic machine, which has got some very high quality coffee. Won't mention the name of a very large roaster, but it actually high quality set, and that's in our kind of super automatic machine that press the button, it'll make you a flat white and do a decent one. So that's the one, that's the go-to for the majority of people in the office. It's high quality but sort of fast pace. We've got guys making Chemexes and V60s and all sorts of filter coffees from different, and I'll grab a pot that's or a French press that's been made. Tend to have about probably four coffees a day, maybe a bit too much actually. I think I'd probably recommend two to three would be the ideal. It's not, but when there's good coffee and there's a lot of high energy, and who can resist, basically.
Yeah, of course. And obviously at Allegro you have insights into a lot of interesting data. One question I usually ask people in these interviews is, what have you changed your mind about recently? So for you, I'd say, has there been any interesting insight from the data that's really surprised you, that has made you change your mind about something in the coffee industry recently?
Matcha was one. I thought that would be a little bit bigger than what it is becoming. I remember being out with a very senior person in a very large chain only a couple of years ago doing a tour of New York City, and I was showing what are all the latest, greatest, and this was a CEO of a major, major company. And I said, oh, you want to try this matcha latte stuff? He's like, what? What is it? And I'm thinking, how can this person not know what matcha latte is? And I'm thinking, this is going to be the next big thing, But I was actually surprised by not everyone. It's just very polarizing, matcha, and a lot of people actually don't go for it. Yeah, so that's one of the things. I mean, it's going to be part of the staples. There's no doubt about it. But it's something that I thought, oh, that would be a little bit. It's a bit like in the UK, there was a chain called Leon, or it still is a chain called Leon. And I remember backing it really heavily 15, 16 years ago and saying, this is great. And it floundered for 7 or 8 years until it found its feet. And now, Leon's a complete staple. Of course, the rise of veganism and vegetarianism and actually I was probably right, but I was a bit ahead of the curve. And I think with matcha, I think it's going to get a slow start. It's having a slow start. When it comes to cold brew, I'm believe that it's going to be quite slow in its take up. A bit like iced tea is not really the biggest thing in the UK, where it's bigger in Europe and it's fairly massive in the United States. And so my prediction is that cold brew is going to be a slow build up. There are other people, so I could be proved wrong. It could be faster than I think. And I think the one thing about our predictions with the fifth wave and the approach, where we're saying this is definitely the way forward, but I think we're some many years ahead of the trend, and I think this is the thing that people might go, wow, well, where are all the boutique chains? And I can see a lot of them emerging in the United States. I can see a few emerging here in the UK. it's going to take a while for these businesses to build up by stealth. I mean, we're already seeing, like, if I look at, like, Cafe Nero, for example, have bought the Harrison Hall chain. That was poised to be the fifth wave chain some 5 or 6 years ago. Never quite really got to it. I mean, it got built by Tesco and then spun out. And now Cafe Nero is sort of treating it as a boutique brand within its portfolio. Cafe Nero have just actually bought a controlling stake in Coffee Number One, and that's 70 or 80 outlets in sort of Wales. And it was, again, very, very renowned for its quality of coffee. So I think we're going to see the emergence. We are seeing the emergence of boutique chains, but it may take longer than we had foreseen currently. You know, we do believe that this is an enduring trend. You know, the rise of quality and scaling of quality is going to be an enduring challenge for the industry going forward.
Definitely a case of watch this space then.
Absolutely.
Jeff, thank you so much for chatting to us today. It was an absolute pleasure.
Great, wonderful.
Where can listeners find out more about you and all the great work that you're doing at Allegra?
Well, we have a number of businesses. You know, the ukcoffeeweek.com will be a good starting point for what we're doing. Projectwaterfall.org, you know, the sort of responsibility side of our business. And LondonCoffeeFestival.com is probably our most visible manifestation. And then on the research side, it's WorldCoffeePortal.com. And that's the data analytics and the knowledge side of our businesses, which is where we all began and, you know, what will remain always our heartland.
Fantastic. We'll link to all of that in the show notes. Jeff, thanks again. It was a pleasure.
Wonderful. Thanks. Yeah.
If you're interested in more insights and advice, you can access all of the bonus content from today's episode, including the episode transcript, on our blog at izettle.com or direct from the link bit.ly/izettlepodcast. Just choose the episode you want, go to the page and sign up on the form to access your bonus content. And finally, if you enjoyed the episode, please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating and review. Thanks for tuning in to Been There, Done That, and catch you next time.